Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And I have in the studio Mark Kelsey. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, Mike. Good to be here.
And I have in the studio none other than Terry Snyder. Welcome back.
Hey, Mike.
And on the phone, Zaz Hollander. Welcome, Zaz.
Thanks, Mike. Good to be here.
Last night was a special night. Here in the Valley, we had none other than Neil Fried, who came to the Massey Theater, and he spoke. And he spoke about projections of the economy in the Valley. I heard part of it because I was covering another event, but I recorded it, and it is up on our website.
Oh, great.
Yeah, that is great.
And the summary is, maybe nobody knows, but there are clouds on the horizon. And just to give you a teaser a bit before you have a chance to listen to the whole thing, et cetera, he points out something that perhaps we have all known for some time, is that, one, the Valley has been growing, expanding. And two, we are different than the rest of the state. And three, a lot of that difference involves people who work outside of the Valley, either on the slope or in Anchorage, and make a lot of money. But those jobs might just be the ones that are affected, changing the dynamic of the money flow here in the Valley. Any initial reactions, Mark?
I'm curious what sort of effect did he think that those jobs, how would those jobs affect what's going on in the local economy?
Well,
did he suggest that they're going away?
So one of the really interesting questions is the sustainability, the comparison, if you will, of this valley with the rest of the state. And I think he did a pretty good job of doing that in pointing out that we have different characteristics here. But when you think about someone who's making $100,000 a year but is working elsewhere but has chosen to live here and take that income and throw it into the pot, if you will, of buying homes and buying things and living here. And if that person is going to go away, if there's going to be some effect on the North Slope or in other oil-related jobs, that can be an interesting thing. He also pointed out, and I'm touching little bits and pieces here that float by. I don't think he was, I wouldn't say totally pessimistic, but what he was suggesting was that it's either a question mark or some interesting possibilities of some significant change. There are a number of observers who've looked on to the Valley and say, well, it probably can't continue to grow the way it has been. This has been a surge of unusual proportions, and I think there are a lot of observers who might share that. And yet we get caught up, and the reason why I like beginning today with this is because maybe it helps to explain the psychology in another place further south down in Juneau. So once you get going and things are building and money is flowing, that becomes the normal. And when that stops, maybe what we're seeing here in Juneau is something we will have to adjust to here in the Valley a little bit down the road. Any other comments? Zaz, what do you think?
Well, I haven't listened to Neil's presentation yet. I couldn't make it last night. But I wonder if it was a little bit more of a Mat-Su expansion on a presentation he and Gunnar Knapp gave.
Right. I think that's true.
What, 2 months ago?
Yep. I think that's true.
I think
was the first time we heard the word recession from Gunnar.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or statewide picture.
Right.
Yeah, I think more importantly, I think more that Valley people might recognize more than jobs going away on the slope. And a lot of those are service jobs, and we're not going to see that effect for a little bit. And Anchorage jobs that maybe people won't retire quite as quickly as they had hoped to come to live in the Valley, or people that bought in Anchorage that won't build in the Valley. I think we'll see that. But I think what we might see more significantly are the people that have come here for the projects that we've had here, road projects, school projects. We've had some pretty significant a five-year plan of development in roads and road bonds and schools, and those are just about to wrap up. And those, I think, are what the impact we're going to feel quickly and more identifiable is those local people that live here and work here that no longer will have employment because there'll be no projects. There's going to be there's going to be no capital money. And the prison's already open. That brought a lot of families out here. There may be some families that come to still come out to be close to the prison for various reasons. But I think that's what we should keep a look on. And that was sort of is the litmus test of what's going to happen in the Valley, in my view.
Mark? Those are really good points. I'm curious, did Neil Fried point to anything as, you know, possible soft landings or providing opportunity to offset what he sees as downturns?
I was not aware of that. And give you full background here. I wasn't there for the entire event. So I got portions of it and I talked to other people. What I'm saying is here in since it's up on the Radio Free Palmer website, I would invite people to take a look at it, listen to it. I think from looking at the audience, the large audience in the Massey Theater, a lot of good questions being asked of all sorts. And Neil Fried is not one to go over and talk and speculate unless he has something that he could use as a basis. And I think you're right, Terry, he followed on from earlier presentations. And there's some good detail there. I'm particularly interested. You mentioned the word project, and maybe this is a moment we can segue a bit from Neil Fried's presentation overall about the economic development of the Valley, and look at once again the issue of mega projects. I have noted there, and yesterday in particular, there was a rejoinder from Tim Bradner to earlier columns, and there were two other columnists who have been into this looking at, well, I'm going to take three because I, Elise also wrote a piece about large projects, and of course, Charles Wolforth has, as well as Dermot Cole, and now Tim Bradner. And my sense about it is there's a sensitivity amongst a number of people about mega projects. And probably rightly so, if there are legislators and local political figures that have supported mega projects, and they don't show an immediate return, or they turn a little sour or a lot sour. There's a concern about this, and I think it has two elements. One, the question is raised: where were you guys when all these projects were being approved? Where were you guys when these large budgets were being approved? Were you so caught up in the moment and in the ecstasy that went along with having the other people's money that there was no provision for the what if it there were a downturn? And there are a number of people that are in positions in the legislature down in Juneau in particular who were there through the years when these decisions were being made. So there's the one thing that I note, for example, it's a smaller project. It's not and people have trouble seemingly to define what mega means. But I'm talking about the MV Susitna. Zaz. Go ahead.
I saw that one coming, Zaz.
You must be overjoyed, Mike, that the ferry is back in the news.
Oh, now we can talk about it. Right. Go for it.
Yeah. So the ferry is going to Seattle, maybe even today, under tow, because Lloyd's of London, which is the borough's insurance company on the ferry, sent a highfalutin New York engineer out to look at the ferry and sort of gauge the level of damage and the repairs needed. And the borough had originally gotten about a $1.1 million estimate to fix the ferry in place. So to refresh everyone's memory, this is three of the four engines were damaged by heavy rain in southeast last year, and the stacks on the ferry are sort of at 90 degrees, and so it has to kind of rain sideways to really get a lot of water.
Which it does in Ketchikan, yes.
And it does, yeah. It does in Ketchikan. So anyway, the three of the four engines sustained enough damage that the thing doesn't work, and the estimate the borough got hinges around doing the repairs at Ward Cove, at the dock where the Susitna is berthed and has been since 2011. And this engineer shows up from Lloyd's of London and says, basically, that's not good enough, that you can't get in to really work on those engines. And what if you get halfway through this repair and you have to take out the engines? You can't do that in Ward Cove, and it'd kind of be stuck. So it would be even more expensive. And, you know, this is a company that, fingers crossed for borough taxpayers, is going to foot the bill. And so they have the assembly approved sending the ferry to Seattle, but has yet to officially approve the about $2 million additional that it's going to cost to do that kind of a fix on the ferry. And keeping in mind that Lloyd's still hasn't committed that the borough is going to have to pay up front after transferring some land management fund money into an available account for the ferry, that the borough is going to have to pay for it and then get reimbursed by Lloyd's of London. Which is, you know, the borough manager says it's something he expects to happen. But as the bill is growing, I think Lloyd's is looking at it and saying, why are we paying this? What are we fixing this for? And meanwhile, the Philippine Red Cross is waiting for its ferry.
Yeah.
Maybe the manager needs to learn how to manage his expectations a little bit.
So before we leave the projects, both small or large, I'd like to just reference Tim Bradner's column, which was something of a pushback against the idea that mega projects really don't pay off. And he used the example, of course, of the Red Dog Mine as one that has been apparently successful over a long period of time, et cetera. And but it's the only one that I know that he's referencing in that way. And I was a little, it was my impression, if any of you have read that column, it mm-hmm. felt lightweight to me. I think both Woolforth and Cole were a little more exacting in providing details of what they were talking about.
Perhaps only on one side of the issue, though.
Absolutely.
I would say Charles Woolforth especially cherry-picked his data to support his position that seemingly any dollar spent on developing infrastructure is wasted, and that's, of course, totally absurd. He refused to cite any successful state projects, talked about ADA only in negative terms when this, you know, public corporation has returned $373 million to the state in dividends over the years. There are bona fide success stories that he completely ignored, apparently to serve his agenda that, you know, these kinds of projects are bad. It's easy in lean times to say we don't have the money for this. That seems obvious, but to extend the argument and say, okay, this is stupid because we don't have the cash for it, is very short-sighted, in my opinion. Especially, well, you think about the rail extension, the $180 million or so that's been spent already. There's no indication that anybody thinks that we're not going to finish that. And to say, look, here's a rail bed that ends in the woods, what a waste of money, seems extremely short-sighted to me when a finished rail line will make the port more viable and aid the borough's economy, take the burden off of property tax owners. There's so much there that was overlooked, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Saz, comment?
But I think Mark makes some good points, and I was eager to hear what he had to say because on mega projects, Mark is always interesting. But in terms of Bradner's piece, I think that he points out that, you know, gosh, if we have this puncher rail extension from the port to the parks, we can ship coal more easily, and we'll be able to, you know, move freight needed for if there's a gas line constructed. There's a lot of what ifs. I think the gas line Well, both. And coal is a huge question mark right now. And so I think that at least that one example points to, if anything, I think goes against Bradner's argument and shows that either the lack of foresight on the borough's part in terms of what exactly would be shipped, or just the questions that arise when you're dealing with a resource economy and resource prices and supply demand fluctuate so wildly that you may have a project, you may have demand when you propose it and fund at least part of it, but by the time it starts rolling, the demand has changed.
Okay.
Well, sure. I think Mark and Zosmik have pretty much covered it. I would say that I sort of agree, too, that Tim Bradner had pretty a light retort to that. And, it could be said he's a former lobbyist. He's a BP oil exec. I mean, there's both sides. They certainly have interests, though. That should speak to her itself. But I also think, there is a fair amount of people that think that a lot of these mega projects that are started, there really isn't. It does put a lot of people to work. It does make a lot of people a lot of money, but sometimes it's not thought out well enough of the financing till the final end. I agree with Mark. There's a lot of people that believe that rail line will be finished, but there's also a lot of people that think it was started knowing it would be a struggle to finish and that maybe that was enough to start the project and that there really wasn't when you start those and there really wasn't a plan to finance it other than to ask. And that depends on the state budget and it depends on the federal government. And when you go to build a house, in a more simple term, if you're going to finance it, the bank wants to know how you're going to pay for it. And they want to know what your income is going to be, and they're going to base it on that plan. And really what these mega projects are sort of, wishes and hopes that the federal government and the state government will have enough money. And is that good enough anymore? It's fine when we're riding high. When we're not riding high, it's not so fine. And, it's not unlike the ferry. There's plenty of finger pointing to go around. But what we do from here on out as we maybe start rethinking what our qualifications are for doing those things, not that they're not good projects. Mark's, made a good point on that. But maybe we need a little more assurance that we're not just waiting for the global market to turn around, or we're not just waiting for the federal government to come around, or some big entity that has a slippery way of getting out of things. So, I'm more interested in the lesson learned at this point than the finger pointing to what's going on. And from what I'm seeing, it's sort of a non-issue because we're not going to be able to think about mega projects unless something changes, like there's a huge infrastructure bond from the federal government after the next presidential election, if that actually happens, or could be some money there, and or if the people decide to finance it, which is unlikely if they're losing their jobs. So,
okay,
a lot of things.
Well, I'd like to take care of a couple of local topics, and then saving the best for last, have Terry recount some of her adventures in Juneau, or give a perspective about Juneau. So the first two things I want to bring up are, the MTA deregulation vote that's being requested at the present time. Michael Burke, CEO of MTA, was in this morning, and we spent about 20 minutes, and I recorded an interview. And I'm impressed. I think Mr. Burke speaks fairly well to in the 6 months he's been there. He's been around the state and the business for a long time. And what I am also aware is that this is a kind of a difficult topic, although it seems simple. You receive a little blue card, or medium-sized blue card in the mail, and it says MTA deregulation. There's a few points made there, and it asks you to vote. And what you're doing is sending this your ballot that you receive to the RCA, not to MTA. And the other point that's made here, maybe I can point this out, and then I'll ask for your comments about it, is this has only to do with landlines. It's nothing to do with the internet and other regulations. The third thing about it is that apparently about 10 years ago, the RCA made a determination that would have allowed this to happen, and that there are other telephone companies in the state of Alaska that have already done this. So what does it mean? As Mr. Burke suggested, That it means that up not quite $200,000 will not flow out of the pockets of co-op members through MTA to the Regulatory Commission for no action, because given the competitive environment that has been determined to be in effect in the Valley at the present time, they do nothing. The RCA does nothing here. So it seems to be a housekeeping task. That's what it seems like. But I'm interested in your observations. Mark has this thinking cap look on.
Yeah, that's because I'm not super fluent in this yet. The folks at MTA are passionate about this and are quick to point out the advantages. I do agree with you, though, Mike, about there appear to be bigger ramifications than just this being a housekeeping item. I'm not sure yet what they are. I know that MEA is paying very close attention and considering taking a bite at the same apple, depending on how it goes. But, I'm certainly no expert in the ins and outs of it.
Okay. How about you, Saz?
I haven't looked very closely at this one yet. I understand it. It's one fee that we all wouldn't have to pay, and I think that reducing costs to consumers is a good thing, that they already are deregulated on other aspects of their business. This is the part of their business that really, I think, for most customers, if you think about it, if they think about it, is what still defines MTA as a co-op. On the flip side, I think that anytime you hear deregulation, it makes you wonder. There's a reason that there's regs in place, but MTA is saying that there's very few other similar cooperatives or similar telecom companies that aren't deregulated at this point.
Okay, at least for the landlines as they're described. Terry.
Well, I'm going to be the skeptic on this. I'm first of all a little befuddled that there's so much information about how great it is and no con, and that always worries me. They're spending a lot of money, time, and energy telling people how good it is for them, and they're leaving out a few important things in my mind, and this is just a personal observation, but the money they're talking about, as far as I know, and nobody's been ever to challenge this, is about, I think, 0.1% of their budget, which is really like $5 a year, 5 cents. It's some ridiculous amount that they're really saving consumers. That makes me worry that this big thing is for consumers, but it's not really the amount of savings per consumer they're talking about. I don't think the RCA has a lot of real heartburn with telephone companies going deregulated as much as they do electric utilities, because in this country we sort of have a right to have power, and a lot of, it's sort of a fundamental basic thing is to have heat and power, but not so much with telephone. But I just think that there should be what they are losing that they aren't reticent to tell consumers is what the RCA does do is they are where you go if you have a complaint, if you're having a problem with their service. If this is taken away, then they have to go to the FCC or some other larger federal body to air their concerns, or they have to go to the MTA board. If there's a board, they're a co-op. And if they merge and they're bought out, then you have to go to whoever they were bought out from, who will also be deregulated. So it worries me a little bit. Not that I don't think that MEA is a great utility. It's been very sensitive, very supportive of community projects. But I think it's important that consumers know what they're losing altogether, and the right to really appeal what's going on, and having a sounding board, a governmental agency, that's what the RCA is. There are a couple suits, if you look now, on challenges on behalf of consumers on other things. I don't know about telephone, but that.
Okay, and are they, and this is a specific thing and information that we probably want to get between now and our next show. Do they have to do with landlines? Because MTA is regulated under RCA, even if the vote were positive on this one, or the meaning that to deregulate the landline aspect of it, they're still under regulation by the RCA for all of the rest of the business.
But a lot of people, if you look where we're at, don't have broadband beyond a landline line. They don't have cable, so they don't have internet service unless they have a landline in our where we're at. So I don't know. It's fuzzy to me. There's I'm not taking a stand either way, other than to say I want the consumer to hear all the information, and I'd like to hear from somebody other than the person that wants it to happen.
Well, one of the questions that I asked Mr. Burke was just that, if he was aware of any group that, and I'm not aware of any group. I haven't seen anything
I'm
in
not
opposition.
Either.
So let's leave this as a still open question. We've got a little bit of time before the voting is done, et cetera. And we'll see what more emerges about it. The second topic before we turn to Terry and Juno is what happened to the mayor of the borough that he should be sued for not being a nice guy? Mark.
I don't know what happened. Is this a rehash of a campaign issue? I know there was some 11th hour.
No, this was that he badly spoke to a person who he had taken on to train, to operate.
Gwen Bogart.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there was something like that brought up right before the election by people opposed to Vern Halter's candidacy. I don't know. Is it possible to be sued for this?
Yeah. Zaz?
I think that the issues that came up before his campaign were brought up by the anti-Iditarod, anti-Vern, anti-Mushing people.
Right.
And this is a former... was she a handler? But she was leasing and buying a team from him.
Right. A trainee.
And yes, a trainee. An underling, I guess underling isn't the right word. But anyway, yeah. So that's what the suit involves. And it's just, I didn't pull the documents. Our court reporter, Jersey, did. So I'm not familiar with the ins and outs. It sounds like Mike is.
Only that the Frontiersman had a top of the page, front page headline about it and some detail about the... you know, what he said, she said, or the rest of it. But it sounds like it's unrelated to anything involving his performance or lack thereof as mayor, but it has to do with a disagreement between two people who had a contract and therefore will be settled in the courts.
Well, and it's also interesting because, yes, he is, it may or may not have speak to his character as mayor, but he is the mayor of, you know, of the borough. And it also shows how much it can cost to buy an Iditarod team. It's what, $52,000, I think, was the total price.
Wow.
Big bucks. Big bucks.
Yeah.
Well, let's go now and finish up with Terry, the best for the last. You've just returned from Juno. You've dried out. And what's your sense of the spirit of people down there or the... Yeah, what's going on this year as compared to others?
Well, it was just a kind of a brief couple-day visit, and I'll be back next week. But, you know, there is a different – and I, Mike, you pointed this out with your visit, which was just previous to mine, but also previous before the resolution that went through that kind of put all the halt to what business as usual on the House side other than taking up budget bills. It's a very somber feeling at the Capitol this year. It's a very serious feeling. I sat in – on the special finance committee that Senator McKinnon put together on the Medicaid issue. Senator Machicki's on it, Senator Kelly, and they had a panel from across the board, a lot of people asking questions, giving them information. And she seems very serious, and people seem to be appreciative of the fact that she's very serious about getting information on that out. So there's a lot of work being done there, a lot of very busyness around those committees. The House seems a little disjointed, people kind of wandering around, not very focused at this point, although they all seem to be in unison that, yes, the budget is number one and that they should all be working on it. But I don't know that they'd actually been able to kind of see what that looks like when you've sort of not done any other – you're not doing any other business. And you know, had they not done a lot of business last year, which is only passed, I think, 19 bills or 20 bills, and they have hundreds literally sitting on their desks that will die, it may not be much of a big deal. But we also have this pesky thing called an election coming, and it's in October, and legislators can't raise money when they're in session. So there's a certain urgency, I would say, this year about getting out of there. I'm told that there's people that won't run again, although nothing specific announcements, then there are people that will not be employed again. And that always puts sort of a somber feeling on everything. I talked a lot of people. There has been some huge groups there still down to talk to legislators. I talked to a couple of hotel people that hadn't seen any massive cancellations, people not going down to talk to them because they're not going to be doing anything. That could change as this draws, you know, out. But it's definitely a different feeling in the halls, almost like, you know, everybody's been told to be quiet and study, sort of. And we'll just have to see. I'll have more of a feeling for it when I spend a few days there next week and see what the contrast is. It's early in the session. But I think there's the celebratory parties are at a minimum. And the woman's bathroom isn't as clean. I'll say that. So I'll say if maybe they're... I've already made some cuts.
Okay. Well, we've come to the end of the time allotted. So I want to thank Zaz Hollander. Thank you, Zaz.
Thank you, everybody.
I want to thank also Terry Snyder. Thank you, Terry.
Sure, Mike.
And I want to thank Mark Kelsey. Thank you, Mark.
And it's always a pleasure, Mike.
Okay. We look forward because these are all ongoing stories and things are evolving and changing. And we haven't even talked about the LIO. We'll save that for next time. All right.